Hello and welcome to what I think is episode 82 of Must See Matches. I am Kieran Lefort, the technico around these parts, and joining me is the master Rudo, Mark Buckledy. Mark, how are you doing?
I'm much better now than I have been for most of this week, where I've been not well and my brain has been doing some very strange things while I've been trying to sleep.
I think that's a whole nother podcast of itself. Well, so you watched Lucha while possibly in the middle of like a fever?
I can't remember when I first watched this, so I think
all right, fine.
I think no, I think I waited. I actually had to stop myself from watching any form of narrative for a couple of days because it was just going badly.
Tremendous. The match we're getting into today is Atlantis versus Villano 3, Mask versus Mask from Marina, Mexico, March 17th, 2000. And the only person we could call to come and explain all of this to us is the man who probably knows more about Lucha than anybody else. The Cubs fan is here. Cubs, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
No worries. No worries. We've said before, we are massively out of our depth when it comes to Lucha. This is our last Lucha match we're going to be looking at, of only two, I think. Unless you want to count Psicosis versus Rey Mysterio Jr. in WCW. But as you are a first timer, I'm afraid you have to suffer the first timer questions. And I'm going to start by asking you, how did you get into wrestling in general in the first place?
I really don't know, which is something that was on TV a lot during the weekends when I was very unsupervised and was not really working on the schoolwork I should have been working on. But I just like started watching it when I was a teenager, followed a little less after that, and then followed it more as I got onto the internet and got into message boards and things that were pre-message boards and found a community of people who were interested in it.
What was it about Lucha in particular that grabbed you?
You know, I really got into Lucha about maybe 18 months after this match. I was someone who was watching a lot of WCW, and when that went away, I watched more WWE, but it's like, I was still like craving stuff that I could not find, and I was not in a, let's say, financial position to do tape trading and buy Japanese tapes or whatever. Sure. But what I could do is that I had cable, and a secondary Spanish station called Galavision was airing CML and AAA all the time, and I could watch that. And I had a couple of friends, Joe Gagne, which podcast people would know, was watching it and writing about a lot of the message boards, and it encouraged me to check it out. And I started watching from there, and I was lucky enough to get into a really good period with CML in 2001, and from there on, that got me hooked.
It's funny, Galavision for a while aired in the UK, and that was how I first saw, like, some of my first Lucha was like AAA on Galavision in the, oh God, it would have been 94, 95.
Jesus, I did not realize a channel like that would have been in UK available in the
Because 90s. Like cable was like a wild west. It wasn't like dominated by Virgin Media and Sky. Like it was a bit more, bit looser than that. Something else I wanted to ask. So who are some of your all-time favorite luchadors?
It changes over time, but like Ultimo Guerrero and Rey Bucanero were the first two who really got me in, as they, like when I started first watching, they were coming up from like mid-carders with some promise to suddenly beating the top guys. And so that was, it was a fun ride to take on. But then like in more recent years, it's guys like Aries, it's guys like Phoenix. Watching like a Pentagon Jr. who I saw from like his first AAA match and started yelling at people in email that they need to start pushing this guy right away. Mm. I didn't see him actually, it worked out for him. Mm. It's the guys that you follow when they were just starting, were just getting their feet wet or just getting onto TV, who've gone on the farthest, have been the funnest to watch.
Mm. Yeah. I like Arrows a lot lately as well. Like he moves like nobody else and thinks about the ring in ways other people don't.
Yeah, I really appreciate, because he was a generic Mexican cruiserweight kind of guy doing all the Japanese moves he saw and doing a lot of dives. And then at some point he sat down and realized, I can get this far. I can be on all these indie shows, but I really have to come up with my own ideas and my own way of doing things. And he figured it out and started applying it and just really took off from there. So it's been an interesting one to watch.
And before we dive back to the year 2000, what would you say is worth watching in the world of Lucha in 2023? Or who should we be looking out for? Who's up and coming?
The guy I'm most excited about is the new Máscara Dorada in CMLL. I mean, they call him Máscara 2.0. He's almost doesn't feel like a breakout star because, like, he's risen so quickly in the last 8 months where he was just...
He's super young still, isn't he?
He's like 21 or 22. It's just insanely young. He was a kid who was doing amateur wrestling, like I think it was Greco-Roman or something like that, until COVID, and then there was no place to train. And his father was a wrestler, a very known wrestler, but he wasn't thinking about going to rest into Lucha Libre anytime soon. But all the amateur wrestling gyms were closed. So he thought, oh, I'll just train Lucha Libre. That's still open. And he instantly had a knack for it and started, and they put him in the ring within like a year of him starting training. So that's been fun.
Yeah, he's been over here recently too. He was on the Rev Pro shows. He made quite an impression. I get the impression that he will be coming back to do more over here. And I'm quite excited to like get to see him in person. I thought you were going to say he was doing amateur wrestling until one day he just busted out a shooting star press in the middle of a Greco-Roman match and that was it.
The transition was complete. A story where Dragon Lee was like his father. The Dragon Lee that's in WB right now was he wanted to train all sorts of different martial arts and do boxing. And one day he was put in a boxing match with a guy who was a lot bigger, had a lot more skilled, and it was going badly for him. So he just like at some point you just stop and he suplexed his opponent, and that was his last boxing match.
Well, if you know you're going to lose in a way that people remember,
lose in style.
Yes,
Mark. We've covered that this is the second of two matches from Mexico we are covering. Did either of these guys get any more nominations?
Yep. So starting with Villano 3, he had one other nomination, which was against Rambo from a UWA match in 1987. Both Villano's 4, 5, and 3 Junior also got nominated in at least one match.
Busy family.
Atlantis basically rolled them all up into himself. He had 4 nominations, including a match against Blue Panther in 91, a mask versus mask match against La Sombra, who I believe is Andrade Del Idolo currently, from 2015. Yeah. And a mask versus mask match against Ultimo Guerrero from 2014.
Busy man.
The bit that took me a lot of time to research, and I really should have done it earlier, Villano is the second most experienced wrestler that has a match that we're covering on the podcast.
Okay.
He was 30 years into his career at this point of the match, and the only person who'd been wrestling for longer in their match was Dustin Rhodes, who had 31 years experience when he wrestled Cody. The only guys that are anywhere near close, Terry Funk was 27 years in the business when he wrestled Anita in 93, and Hogan was 25 years in the business when he wrestled The Rock at that Mania in Toronto.
That Dustin Rhodes comparison is interesting because they both, Villano 3 started very young, also second generation wrestler. Also, his father had some sort of booking influence in the promotion to get him going early. So,
Well, that leads nicely into my next question. Who are these men and how do we get to the point where they want to take each other's masks?
Well, Villano 3 is the son of Mexican Hall of Famer Ray Mendoza. He had 5 sons who all got into wrestling, the 5 Villanos. Mendoza was a longtime EML. First Rudo, then Technico. His first two sons, Villano 1 and Villano 2, joined him in that promotion in the 70s, but really could not escape the opening matches. They really just did not advance, and that, I think, upset Mendoza, especially when the promotion brought in a couple other guys whose last names were Mendoza and pushed them a lot harder. So when Villano 3 comes along and is ready to wrestle, his father tells him to do not come to EML, go wrestle on the Indies, go wrestle on elsewhere. And a few years later, when the rival UWA promotion starts, they see Lana 3 is a successful indie guy and they bring him in, and eventually his father jumps that promotion as well. But Lana 3 is pushed as the young star of that promotion for many years, sticks to that promotion until it starts to fall apart in the early 90s, and then kind of just floats around a little bit, goes to AAA for a while, and eventually ends up here in CMLL. But he's, in that time, he was the UWA. He was the, even though his name is Volano, and Volano means villain, he was actually the heroic mass man who would face all these crazy rudos who were brawling all over the place. He would fight with courage and bravery. They called it, to the point where they nicknamed him King Arthur.
He's sort of an honorable villain.
An honorable villain. So he's that kind of hero for UWA. Atlantis comes along about a decade later in the 80s, and he's first a high-flying Technico, which as time wore on, he was more a traditional kind of mat technician. But he's the same sort of character, where he's the good guy who wins the big battles. He has big mass wins over guys like Kung Fu. By the time of this match, he's had three real notable mass wins. And he wins a bunch of titles. He's the classic clean good guy.
Yeah, he's like the hero of the children is what they call him, isn't it? Something like that?
Yes. Yeah, one of the announcers nicknames of that, and that sticks. So in the fan's mind, this is like the ultimate good guy from one promotion that's fallen away versus the ultimate good guy from another promotion. In CML storylines, Volano 3 and his brothers have come in, and they're rudos now. They're aligned with the evil Pirov, who has a group, has a Puerto Rican army who's attacking the Mexicans. And there's a rudo technical dynamic. But I think the reason it became bigger is because Volano 3 had this big history in another promotion, and there was a little bit of promotion versus promotion dream battle there.
So Viano comes down the ramp, clad in bright pink, with a scantily clad woman also in bright pink hanging off him, with a whole bunch of other Vianos. It's a music I think is from Total Recall.
No, the music is from Conan the Barbarian, I believe.
Oh, it sounded very much like a track from Total Recall I used in a short film I made as a teenager.
Well, I had to work out what this was, because I always had heard that Volano 3's music was a Pink Panther theme. And when this started, it's like, that is not the Pink Panther theme.
Which I think would have been much funnier for this match. I haven't seen the rest of the show, but did only Atlantis come out of that entranceway, or did some of the other Technicos use it?
I recall it's only Atlantis who uses that entranceway.
Yeah.
It's got his name on it.
It has, but it looked like that might have been projected on. So I didn't know if when other people came out, they had their names projected on it instead. It looks a little bit like he's coming out of an elaborate tomb. But I can imagine, like, it's, you know, like an underwater stone structure from a lost civilization.
Yeah, it's a Greek-style temple with a Catherine wheel pinned to it.
And everybody is much too close to that Catherine wheel. It's big, it's right behind his head, and it is just spraying into the faces of the people who are leaning over the top of that structure.
Also, my realization, and I want to put this on the podcast, my realization was, because I'd kind of half seen this Atlantis mask over the years, and I was watching the match, and I'm thinking, is his mask just two blue fish having a stare down?
Yes.
Yes.
And it's like, that's genius. That is genius.
He's the hero to the children and the friend of all the fish.
Yes.
I guess second only to Fishman, the man actually called Fishman. The visual of him having to push his way down this narrow aisle with everybody wanting to touch him is great. That gives like a really good hero dynamic to him, I think. Thank you for clearing up about Viano being a technico for a lot of his UWA career, because I was under the impression like Atlantis was straight technico and Viano was the villain, the huge rudo. But there are massive, massive Viano chants before they start. My Spanish is super limited, so I caught the ring announcer saying it was one fall and no time limit. Did he also announce it was no DQ and no count out? Because there was seen other things before he talked about the time limit.
I did not hear no DQ, no.
Okay.
That's not something that would count. Now, it's extremely rare that CML does a count out.
Sure.
So they might not even mention that.
It just made me wonder because I heard the ref, seen the announcer, seen this, seen that, seen the other.
They might have said sin in parte, which they say no draw, that there's going to be
an I see. Winner. There must be a winner.
Yes.
Okay, that makes more sense because the referee definitely starts counting people out later on. Yeah. I love the idea of the pre-match graphics with all the stats on them, the height, the weight, the hometown, the trainer, and the little video of them posing in the corner.
It was very nostalgic. You would see that on all the 2000 videos, and they've dropped that for the last decade. So sure. I had not thought about those videos in a long time, and that's something I would see every single week.
Viano doing the lat spread tickled me, but the one that made me laugh the most was Atlantis, who was clearly running out of ideas. Double thumbs up, double clenched fist, single thumbs up, single clenched fist, fists collide, interlaced fingers, double point, double thumbs up, double clenched fists. It was like his GIF had run the loop and was starting again. But the thing was, he was only holding these poses for about half a second each, and if he'd just been a little longer, he could have stretched it out more.
No.
I called it 5 minutes of messing about, getting the referee replaced. It's a rudo ref. Is his name Baby Richard?
Yes, it's Baby Richard. He wasn't like explicit rudo referee, like if you've seen Tarantes from AAA, yeah, where all he does is cheat. But he would, when there were controversial finishes, he would usually side with the rudos, and everyone was well aware of. And the guy they replaced him with, Rafael Almeida. Is that Rafael? No, that might be Roberto Ramadel. The guy they replaced him with was like a known, he's plays by the book, he's a very technical guy.
Sure. Atlantis is not happy about this Baby Richard being assigned. He has a word with the commissioner, and Richard is sent packing, but not before he hugs Viano and wishes him luck on the way out.
Yeah.
They made such a show of this, I was convinced he was coming back later. He doesn't.
The touch that I love is that the replacement referee is clearly buttoning his shirt up, yes, as he wasn't expecting this. And that's a lovely bit of continuity.
Yes.
Yeah.
Who is Atlantis's second in the black and white mask?
It would be Rayo de Jalisco Jr. He's also obviously a second generation, just like a generic technical guy. He'd be most famous because he had a mass match with Sam Karras about 1991 that sold out this building. Sold out so much that people rushed the building and the upper deck had to be shut down because they broke the foundation.
That match. I've heard the legend of that, and I've heard his name before, but I don't think I've ever actually seen him.
Yeah.
They both get strong mixed reactions. And one of the things I like was Arena Mexico is packed, but there are no fence sitters. Everybody in that building is cheering for somebody. I love the high up shot of the ring that shows it just in the middle of the screen. And then like, it would be nicer if it was lit more, but like you can see thousands of fans around there. Like this looks like a big event.
Well, wasn't our other lucha match also from the arena, and you did not get any sense of scale whatsoever?
No. You see, it makes a difference how you shoot things. I also liked the roadie run shot they do down the ramp into the ring. Better than the last time we saw one of these, which was WrestleMania 10 when Earl Hebner blundered into the camera right at the end of it. So it's all basics to start out with. Atlantis gets to do a nice flip out of grounded head scissors and then gets knocked down by something we don't see because the director is on a crowd shot. Viano finally decides he's going to be rudo and gets the crowd to turn against him. He doesn't break a hold in the ropes. He's the first to use a strike, and then he tears Atlantis's mask open. Atlantis gets clotheslined over the top to the floor, landing in a large and exquisitely penned pro Viano sign. Then Viano comes out to join in with a tope. And the masterful thing about this tope is they work a crack of heads, giving them both an excuse to get color without having to use a weapon, get thrown into a post or anything like that. I don't recall seeing that kind of thing done before, and I thought it was really clever and really organic. As Atlantis is clearly going to try and squeeze as much blood as he can out of his head, the ref waves in a doctor to come and check on both men. And we know he's a doctor because he's wearing a white coat. I really like the use of the slow motion replay showing over and over again the moment where the heads collide. Like it's subtle, but it's unsubtle.
When I first saw this, I kind of wasn't sure like what had happened because I first you see that Atlantis is bleeding, and it's only later on do you really notice that Villano is, because of course he's got a pink mask, and if something's a little bit darker, it's not easy to see.
The bit where he's there's my next note, in fact. They cut to Villano, and you can see him trying to unstick the mask from the cut, which is quite horrible. Atlantis gets back in. Villano tries to follow by basically just repeatedly kneeing Atlantis in the cut, and then turns a suplex into a small package for what has to be the longest near fall of all time. I know it's a lucha thing, but this referee wound me up. Very carefully getting down on his knees, very carefully checking the shoulders, making a very determined one count, making a very determined two count, and then waiting, and then there's the kick out, and oh, he was so close to making that three.
As someone that does not watch a lot of lucha, one of the two things I'd realised by this point is that I was going to struggle with the referee counts. Ironically, after I'd seen the match, I didn't notice it as much because I knew it was coming.
Yeah.
The other thing I noticed, the director of this match was either the father or the mentor of the current directors for WWE and AEW because he loved cutting to the crowd throughout the Sam thing.
I was going to get around to shitting on him at the end. If I'd had the time, I'd have been an absolute nerd and I would have thrown this match in my editing program, and I would have done detect all the cuts, and then I would have removed everything that was wrestling to see how long the televised version of this match is just the audience. It's got to be like 40% audience shots, and it makes it very difficult to get the flow of the match.
Yeah.
Because somebody will be in a hold, and then they'll cut to the crowd, and you'll cut back, and the other person is in a hold.
This, like, the flow count is like it's a common thing with the Lucha Libre. They have a lot of directors who just want to show that emotion from the crowd.
Yeah.
And they miss a decent amount of action by doing that. They don't miss as much on this match as I've seen in some others, but it's just a belief that they need to get that. They need to show how much a crowd is invested in the match. And sometimes you'd be more invested if you actually could just see the match.
Yes, you can hear how much the crowd are invested in the match. And as much as I dislike this, I will still take this over the modern AAA direction I have seen, where the guy just does not stop dancing on the buttons.
The modern AAA direction is there's like, if you've been on a camera shot for more than 2 seconds, you must switch to something else.
Yes. Yes, mid-move to a wide shot for no reason, to a blimp outside the building in the middle of a Hurricane Rana, to the crowd, to the advertising hoardings on the screen. Yeah, it's maddening. I am maddened by a lot of current professional wrestling directing. That includes the majors in the US. Right, anyway, that's that aside out of the way. Villano tried... There appears to be... Hang on, one more. Some of the crowd shots... I know there is clearly fencing somewhere in Arena Mexico. It does look like we're looking at people in jail for a couple of shots.
There's a second deck where it's fenced in, and I don't even remember why it's fenced in at this point, because it just looks very strange whenever they show it.
Is it? I was trying to see, is that like the front row of an upper deck? Is that like just a safety measure to stop people falling down below if they get too excited?
It may be something like that.
So Villano tries a couple of submission holds to no avail, and then comes probably my favourite bit of the match. Atlantis gets him up in a bow and arrow hold, but Villano pops out of it directly into an elbow drop and then lays casually across his chest, propping his head up on his hand for the cover. I called it the paint me like one of your French luchadors cover.
That's a really lovely spot. Another bit that I liked, and I kind of like this whole period of the match where Villano's just basically trying any hold he can think of, but because of his age and because of the blood loss, he can't actually apply any hold for too long. The other bit I like is how he does the La Cavernaria, the neck stretch when you've got the legs hooked, because he's like pushing with his feet and it just looks brilliant.
Yes. Atlantis refuses to submit to that, to an abdominal stretch, to a muta lock, but he can't mount any sort of comeback. His cradle holds are ineffective, and he just ends up in increasingly more complicated lucha submissions. We cut to the crowd, and when we come back, Atlantis is suddenly in control with Viano in a camel clutch, and then the hanging rocking horse thing that I can never remember the name of.
It's a La Campana. It's a hold from like the 1930s that still is around.
They both sort of just sort of sit around on the mat for a bit and try to wipe their eyes of blood, and Viano looks like he's trying to drain his mask.
The blood just really sticks out for me, because I'm sure in many of the other matches it also featured blood, but for
lots. We went on a run of matches where we could not escape blood.
For CML, especially more, even more modern, but even at this point, they were trying to get away from using blood at all. So blood, these guys both bleeding this match is something that these fans are used to seeing in the Arena Mexico, especially to this extent where, like, by the end of the match, Atlantis's mask is as red as Volano's mask.
I'll give it away. I wrote, the state of Atlantis's mask, you'd never believe it was pristine and white half an hour ago. He looks like a tank has run over his head.
Yeah.
It's such a mess.
He's not a bleeder. Otherwise, in those other matches that got brought up as nominees, I don't believe he bled in either one of those. So this is an uncommon performance from him.
Sure, that makes it all the more special, doesn't it? You know, you expect it from John Moxley on a Wednesday night, but yeah. You know, maybe not some other people. They try various clutches, cradles, and submissions. Viano gets the better of strikes, but misses a corner charge and has to kick out of a roll up to save his mask. I noticed at this point we're 20 minutes in and he's chewing gum.
What?
Yes. He's chewing something. They trade near falls with Viano rolling through a lovely top rope crossbody, but then gets wrapped up in a Hurricane Rana. Viano then gets drop kicked out to the floor and crushed with a textbook top rope dive off the top turnbuckle. It's really nice. Back inside, Viano is able to lock it. I think the flying octopus with an armbar, that's one of Viano's trademark holds, right?
Yes.
Because the crowd was going crazy for it. The announcers were going crazy for it.
He used something like that to win the NWA light heavyweight title from Atlantis the month before, which was the last
that
set this up.
Excellent. I see.
It's a fantastic looking move.
Yes. Atlantis, though, elbows him off into a complex combination pin/submission and then shows off his core strength by turning it into something I don't think I can describe, but I think might also double as his trademark sex move. I do not know what this was. He tries it a second time, but Viano pops out of it over the top of him into a sunset flip and then rolls through another Hurricane Rana for a pair of very close two counts. He also turns just being hung upside down. So he's in the inverted gory special and gets his arms free. And he's just being, Atlantis is content to just hold his feet upside down. Think of it like a freeze frame of a poison Rana. He manages to turn that into another sunset flip, but that doesn't win either. He powers on with a clothesline, leg drop and sent on, but gets his complex submission reversed into a small package for a near fall. Was that Cristo Negro?
I believe so.
It's a bit of a figure four, but then you lean forward and like apply a double chicken wing at the same time. I've seen lots of other people do it. Like, I think I've seen somebody like Zack Sabre Jr. do it, you know, just for a rest, given the way he throws around these kinds of holds. But yeah, I'd never known what it was called.
I also like that as the match is going on, you can see that Villano is getting frustrated. There's lovely little moments where Atlantis has kicked out and there's just a little bit of petulance from Villano of just like pushes the leg off or something like that. And you can tell that it's kind of getting to him. Whereas Atlantis, when you see the emotion, it's him showing the strain and the effort, like coming back to the La Campana or, if I've butchered that, the rocking horse. While Atlantis has the hold locked in, he is essentially screaming. His mouth is open. He's in pain. It's the effort is coming through. It's not the most obvious facial selling because, of course, they've both got masks on, but it comes through.
So they charge from opposite corners, and as they meet at the center, Atlantis hoists Viano up into Atlantida, his trademark cross-legged Argentine backbreaker, but can't keep him up on his shoulders. Viano clubs him in the back of the head with a lariat, and both are just selling exhaustion. Atlantis ducks a lariat he can see coming, drop kicks Viano in the back, and when he charges again, gets him back up into Atlantida, drops to his knees, and then cranks it on to get the submission. The referee takes a voluntary bump in calling for the submission, and Arena Mexico explodes.
Oh, it goes absolutely mad. The seconds come in, the crowd are... Everyone is on their feet when that happens. Everyone is happy or elated or I can't remember seeing a match where there's a crowd where everyone is as active in terms of happiness, not just like standing, literally just dancing about, jumping about, pumping, fist pumping the air.
What made me laugh was that Viano immediately babyfaces himself. He comes over and joins Atlantis' celebration. He gets him up on his shoulders. He applauds him. He gestures to the crowd that, he was the better man. He got me. He brings a small child into the ring. He puts up no resistance to having his mask removed. He does an interview putting Atlantis over. He respects the fans. He was beaten by the better man tonight. And then he has to do it all again because the mic was only routed through the TV equipment and not over the PA, so nobody in the building could hear him. After unmasking, he tells us that he is Arturo Mendoza, and he hands over his mask to Atlantis. And then there's an ad break, and when we come back, we get another interview with Mendoza, and somehow he's bleeding more here than he was when he took the mask off.
What I really liked about the unmasking is that his dad is the one undoing the laces while he's being interviewed, and then his dad comes in right at the end on the interview, so you get that family element. It actually is quite touching.
As soon as that mask comes off, you can immediately see the family resemblance.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, these two are most definitely related.
Also, I'm not imagining it. Villano 3 had some gnarly blade scars.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah. The UWA was a heavy bleeding territory. So he has like ridges in his forehead. If you've ever gone to the Lucha Wiki and look up his profile, it's kind of gross to look at his forehead because you can see he's put a lot of work into blading over the years.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to be you either keep your mask or you end up looking like Perro Aguayo. Like those are the only two options in Lucha.
Yeah.
So, Cubs, this has finished very high up our list. This is, give me a second, this is joint 23rd out of the 1,066 unique matches that were nominated for this project. Why do you think it finished so high? What do you think about it makes it must see?
I think the last thing we covered, the emotion of everyone, of the fans into the match, just raises it to a higher level. You really see a crowd just so excited by the what happened to the post-match. I think it's also, I think a Lucha Libre match, sometimes stuff can look unclean, it can look all fake, it kind of looks like they're going through the motions of doing a match and not really doing it. But the stuff in this match, like even early on when Villano was giving the knee lifts to Atlantis's head, it looked sharper and stiffer than usual. All the pretty much everything they did looked very clean, all the submissions, even though they were selling exhaustion and actually being exhausted by the end of the match, everything, the technical level of the match was really well, worked really well. And it was also, like, especially in this time period, it was unusual to see a match that really, they were teasing the end of the match for about 4 minutes in, and they went 20-plus minutes. It was something where they kept the intensity at a high level, and they kept the crowd into the match for such a long time that it makes it stick out.
I like that they were always trying to win, but there is a long period where that's all they were doing. They were just trying different submissions and cradles, and it seemed like they didn't really fight much. And it's been explained a bit more now. Cubs has explained that, like, Viano was a long time technico. I didn't get the sense that they hated each other so much that they needed to put their masks on the line. So there were lots of wrestling and submissions rather than strikes and impact moves that I would associate with a fight to take or keep a mask. Although I said I like how they got to the blood, I kind of meant that in a bubble. In the context of a climax of a feud, accidental, in inverted commas, blood doesn't make sense to me. The blood should come from the hate, not from an accidental clash of heads. We've already shit all over the TV director. I hope whoever that is not in that job anymore. What made this difficult for me was the spotty direction, as I said, made it hard to follow the flow of the match. And I think it for me, it wasn't flowing that well to start with. However, we have to remember where we are in both space and time. Not a lot of big matches in 2000 anywhere flowed. Stuff like WWF matches of 2000, for example, didn't flow but had bigger spots, whereas the spots here were wrestling holds. Yeah, so the bad TV direction just added to something that already felt a bit disjointed to me. I love the atmosphere. It felt big time. It felt like an event. Arena Mexico were up for every second of this. I think they would have been happy with either man winning. And the pot for the finish is unreal. I already said I love the visual of Atlantis's Man of the People entrance. I love the Viano's cheeky elbow drop and pose. I liked Atlantis's selling. So from the blood onwards, if he gets caught in the head even once, he's reeling, he's stumbling. Mm. He even holds his hands up to plead with Viano at one point to stop. Mark and I watch every match twice for this. We do what we call the fan watch, which is where we just let it run. And then we do the notes watch, where we take notes as we go. I pause and take notes. And this was one of the matches I enjoyed much more on my notes watch. For all my criticisms, there was still plenty I liked about this. It's a match I've heard about for years, and I'm glad I finally got to see it. Overall, however, it's still not my cup of tea. However, that doesn't mean I don't think it's must-see. I was with a group of wrestling friends last weekend, and when I told them we were doing this next, one of them called it one of his favorite matches and said, oh, you'll love it. And I'm disappointed in myself that I didn't. But one of the criteria for a must-see match, as we previously talked about, is does it work for the crowd in the building on the night? And this 100% does, perhaps more than most matches we have covered on this show. And additionally, I think if you're going to watch one classic Apuestas match as a cultural thing, as like, as a window onto a time and place of wrestling you might not be familiar with, why not this one?
I am higher on this than Kieran. It's funny, my initial notes on my first watch was, this match really gets going after the head-on collision, and it felt like it dragged a bit. And then I did my second watch and was like, what was I watching when I wrote that? There was a couple of things where I was actually went over my initial notes and was like, okay, I'm deleting that because that doesn't hold up on second viewing. The best bit about this to me is the fact I have so little clue about CMLL, I thought Atlantis was the Rudo here. Because Villano was so beloved, and because of kind of the way I was seeing the story and seeing how much the crowd were pro Villano, I thought he was the face. And now that you've mentioned it, I'm actually going back and visualizing the match, and it makes more sense that Villano's the heel.
Yes. I think this is one that's difficult if you're parachuted into on for a first watch with certain expectations as to how you think it will go. I think I am going to end up watching this in a year, 2 years or whatever, and I will get more out of it the more I rewatch it. Mm. We're just in a position where we have to quickly watch it, take notes about it, dispense thoughts about it on a podcast, move on to the next one.
So I get that, yeah, this is not a hatred match. It's not, I don't know. Cubs, was the build for this kind of like a big heated build, or was there like a big violent feud, or was this just a match that just happened because it made sense at the time and Villano was getting older?
It was more, there was some hate because Villano was working as Rudo, but it was more a sport build, I guess I would say. It's more... They wanted to know. They had to know which one of the two were better. It was kind of more the build. Which one definitely was the better one of the two wrestlers. Mm. They had teased it, this match, for the previous September when they almost did it at the anniversary show, and then they end up doing a different one. But it's more, these two guys have been legends in their own promotions. What's going to be like? Who's going to be the person who get their hand raised, who's going to have to be the person who has to unmask more than they had a personal issue. They just was like, it's more, I guess, more like a dream match kind of build than more than a personal build.
So if you'll forgive me, not too dissimilar to when we did The Rock versus Hulk Hogan, and all the Hogan is a heel stuff was just sort of added because it was WWE, and that's kind of how they do things and what they felt they needed to do.
Yeah, I can see that. I've never considered Volano 3 like Hulk Hogan before.
Oh, he does a meaty leg drop in this. So, yeah. And he immediately, you know, hogs the spotlight at the end of it. So,
Hogan also a former UWA wrestler, so they have those deep connections.
It is a very different match to almost everything that we've covered for me. And one of it is, so as I've said, I don't watch a lot of Lucha Libre. I can probably count on four hands the number of Lucha matches I've seen.
You heard it here first. He's got four hands.
Yeah, two of them are in a cupboard somewhere. but yeah.
At precisely 16 degrees.
I really liked the story of Villano trying to win with all these different holds. I really liked this story. I don't know if it's what they were going for, but it's what I read into, that Villano couldn't hold any holds for too long because of his age, because of the injury, because of tiredness. So it was this sense of, okay, this didn't work, I'll try this. This didn't work, I'll try this. And Atlantis coming from underneath. And now that I know that Atlantis is the face, things like the trying to protect his face spot makes perfect sense. There's like some of the counters are very simple, and often the counter is Villano 3 has incredible core strength for his age. But it was that and all of those desperate like pin attempts, which on the second rewatch, the slow counting didn't get to me as much as it had previously. So there's a lot about this I really appreciate. I'm not going to say that it's a match that I would say is going to be one of my favorites, but I think that's because me as a person and doesn't have this full connection with the Lucha Libre style and pacing. And I know that's on me. I know that there's millions of people that this style works for. And I appreciate that. It's like, you are not going to get everything of a form of media. There will be books that work for other people that don't work for you. And I appreciate that. Coming back to Kieran's point about, is this must-see? Again, I kind of agree with him. It's like, in my opinion, something from Lucha Libre has to be must-see. And if this is the match that the most people are saying it's must-see, and if it's a match that I think has a lot of stuff and elements that you don't get outside of Lucha, then yes, I'm happy saying it's must-see. If someone can present me with a Lucha Libre match that works more for my sensibilities and fulfills that it's not just the modern style reskinned, because that's one of the sad things with wrestling in 2023 is so much seems to be, you can go to any promotion and the style doesn't feel that different to the style in another country and another promotion.
You will just go and see professional wrestling. You won't go and see Lucha Libre. You won't go and see Strong Style. You won't go and see sports entertainment. You will just see wrestling.
Wrestling in 2023 is the most homogenous it's ever been. Yeah. And I think that's a bit sad. So if someone shows me a Lucha match that isn't just like, oh, this is Vikingo doing shit, because he can do great shit, but I can see Japanese wrestlers doing similar great shit. I can see English wrestlers, American wrestlers, Canadian wrestlers. This style feels like it could only really happen in Mexico. There's some bits where it feels a bit British, but even then the pacing and the flow of 70s world of sport is different to how this felt.
Yeah, that's kind of what I meant by like opening a window onto a specific time and place in wrestling. I think we're broadly along the same lines. Like I'm not recommending this necessarily for match quality. I'm recommending it for what it represents, I think. And I think this one will be a grower. Like, thanks to Cubs, now I know more about the context around the match, and it's not coloured by my expectations of what I think a feud-ending Technico versus Rudo mask versus mask match is going to be. I think I'm going to enjoy it more and more each time I watch it. Cubs, is there anything we've missed, got wrong, anything you want to talk about?
I think you've covered a lot of it. Obviously, I hold it a little bit stronger regard than you guys, just because I understand the context a little more. It's part of the story for Atlantis, who's been the like promotional symbol for CML for not from the 80s to now still. It's one of my favorite matches. I think to me, it was another match that you guys mentioned as nominated, the Atlantis versus Ultimo Guerrero match. I hold a little bit stronger but that was because I was there for it. So it's always going to change your perspective on those kind of things. But just seeing, this was like the last moment where like Atlantis is a symbol for the company, but at this point, it's still reasonable that Volano 3 is such a big star that he could unmask him and win that match. And Atlantis is run as a masked man. After this, Atlantis is so legendary that they're never going to make him lose. It's tough to believe at that point. But I think that's what really held out for people for this match. They were so excited because it's rare in Lucha Libre where you have two guys who are at the top or near the top of their experience and their fame, having to sort of mask versus mask match to prove who's better. Volano 3 was a bit older, so it wasn't perfect match, but I think that's one of those things that make it stick out for the Mexican wrestling fan, is this is a rare occurrence where you get these two big of stars in the ultimate gimmick match for Mexico, and it completely delivers with what they're looking for out of that match.
This was 4¾ stars in the Observer. As we alluded to last week, this beat out the Triple H versus Cactus Jack Royal Rumble 2000 street fight by a decent margin to win the Observer Match of the Year for 2000. This show also won Best Major Wrestling Show, and Atlantis versus Viano placed 8th for Feud of the Year. If we have covered everything, I would very much like to thank Cubs for giving us his time today. Feel free to plug whatever you want to plug, tell people where you want to be found on the internet, if you want to be found, all of that kind of stuff.
You can find me too often on Twitter. I'm on LuchaBlog. I'm at LuchaBlog is my main account. I tweet any news that happens with Mexican wrestling. You can usually find it there, or you can find it at my blog. I am the last person on the internet still running a blog. It's at LuchaBlog.com. I have a whole bunch of their products. I have a database. I help manage the Lucha Wiki of the encyclopedia of stuff, but it all stems from either linked on that Twitter account or from that blog. So if you follow those two places, you'll find a bunch of other content.
The nexus of English language Lucha Libre content. As for us, you can go to linktr.ee/mustseematches for all the ways to subscribe, links to the full list of nominations and a whole load more. We are at Must See Matches on Twitter, Instagram, Threads and Blue Sky. We also have a Discord, bit.ly/mustseematchesdiscord. You can come and have a chat over there. I am at Kieran Edits on Twitter, and Mark is
at monkey_buckles.
I will, as always, plug my second show, which is Nothing and Like It, chronicling the UK's Frontier Wrestling Alliance's adventures on TV. You can find everything to do with that at linktr.ee/FWAPod. Episode 2 is out now. Next week, our second Shawn Michaels versus Undertaker match as we travel to WrestleMania 25 in Houston, Texas. And joining us from the Attitude Era podcast and How to Wrestling, Kevin Mahn. Thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.